This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
In this episode, we're excited to partner with Yuha, trusted and loved for premium breast pumps since 2010. Their portable and wearable designs provide comfort and convenience. They empower you to pump effortlessly anywhere, keeping you connected to what matters most. Discover the complete collection of Yuha Australia's premium breast pumps and handy accessories at yuha.com.au. And even better, you can use the code READY15, that's READY15, during the month of July for 15% off the Embody pump.
We've tied so much worth and value to productivity specifically and economic output. For me, when I stepped away from career titles, I was able to really rediscover who I was and what I cared about and what mattered most. And I really do believe in all of the data points that say children are well served as long as they know they are loved and cared for. That I was walking around meeting all these incredible women at the baby playgroup, at the playground. None of them matched the sort of outdated caricature of the stay-at-home mother.
When Neha Roosh decided to take a career pause for family life, the mothers that she met weren't exactly the image that society had painted of them. These mothers weren't baby-obsessed, one-dimensional people without a clever thought. And they weren't people that didn't know how to do anything outside of changing a nappy either. These were smart women with thoughts and passions and ideas. They were choosing to shift gears. Ambition was not left at the threshold that they crossed when they entered the door marked motherhood. In fact, they knew that dedicating themselves to motherhood was able to coexist with their ambition, despite what the world had told them. Cue Mother Untitled. Neha's business that has been on a mission to update the perception of stay-at-home motherhood in America since 2017. Neha has become an absolute champion for the grey area of motherhood because, as she knows well, we're not just working mums or stay-at-home mums. There is so much space in between. Here, we talk about the problem with aligning our values to our titles and productivity, the outdated stereotypes that mothers still face today, and how to return to paid work after a career pause. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the clever, calming, and capable Neha Roosh. Neha, your business is very cleverly named Mother Untitled, and I want to know why you think we are so obsessed with titles.
What a great place to start. I can personally speak to how much gravitas I carried in having these pithy words that describe very quickly who I was, right? So I'll take my own example. When I was working in a traditional career, I was running brand at an early stage startup. As soon as I said those five words, running insinuated I was in some sort of leadership position. Early stage startup or like tech startup meant I was somewhat, you know, with it. Brand suggested I was creative. So it's these very quick words to communicate who you are, except herein lies the issue. That isn't just who you are. But in a culture, especially in America, but I'm learning just everywhere in the world, we've tied so much worth and value to productivity specifically and economic output. And so by extension, what we do for work. So our title quickly comes to stand in for, you know, our identity.
And what role do you think motherhood specifically played in making you aware of titles and their meaning and also maybe their lack of meaning too?
Well, you know, I think when I stepped into motherhood, I found something I'd been looking for so long that was so different from traditional career ladder that I'd been climbing. It was just the sense of peace and contentment. And when I gave myself permission to lean more into that, I opened myself up to explore, to do deeper work that wasn't as sort of limited to sort of the traditional path. So deeper work as in like really, you know, self-work, work with my relationships, work redefining what work meaning was. And I think what I found in motherhood, which we all find just in the day-to-day, is that it's so ever-evolving and it's so ever-shifting. And you really have to hold it all lightly because it all changes over and over again. And so when motherhood sort of forces you to open yourself up to what's possible, it allows you to sort of let go of the limits of what you think define you. And for me, when I stepped away from career titles, I was able to really rediscover who I was and what I cared about and what mattered most. And I think of that now as a superpower, returning more to paid work outside of the home.
And speaking of career and our titles, let's take it back to before the motherhood piece. What did career life look like to you before then?
I grew up in Boston and I ended up returning to Boston and finding my footing at a very young startup agency. It was when Twitter was nascent and I was in the social media side of the business. So I got lucky and I ended up being brought over to a larger agency to helm their digital strategy business. So I was able to, at a very young age, sort of crack the quote unquote glass ceiling, check all the marks next to title, salary, all these sort of outward markers of success. And then I started to look around and think, you know, is this it? And I think I was starting to feel that antsiness as to something wasn't feeling aligned, but I was too young. I wasn't even married yet. So I took the next best path of career pausing, which was to go to business school for 2 years. So I went to Stanford Business School and I really did it as a train stop to surround myself with smart people and figure out what came next. And I actually think I found that again in motherhood. But before that, I left business school, landed what on paper was my dream job. If agency life wasn't right, but I still loved strategy, I still loved storytelling, I still loved marketing to women, going in-house was this kind of next hot ticket. And yet the thing that I hadn't realized that I couldn't shake was the politics and a lot of the sort of, not ruthlessness, because it's not malintended, but the hustle culture of trying to prove your work and really fight for your spot. And some of that, I think, when I had my son, I finally felt like, oh, I don't have to be anything besides myself. This is all I need to be. And that felt so freeing. And so I didn't exactly know what was going to come next. I didn't know at that moment that I was going to go build something after. I just knew I wanted to explore this next version of myself for a little while. And it wasn't a financial no-brainer. Initially, I downshifted into consulting 2 days a week, which allowed me to retain some sort of income. And then I think I took that year as an experimental period to figure out, like, could I do this thing fully at home with my child? What could I get out of it? How could I grow? And that was really the beginning of planting the seeds for what is now the platform you know.
And so you're reconciling with the hustle culture and where you feel like you fit in and where your values fit in. Before you have your son, how did motherhood intersect with these thoughts? Was it something that you queried and wondered how you do all of this? Or did you expect that motherhood might bring this profound shift in how you felt about work?
I always wanted to be a mother. And I know that's not the case for everyone, but that was the one thing that was clear as day for me. It was something I felt really ready for. It was something I wanted to be really intentional about. I really wanted not just a baby, but a happy family life and a secure partnership and a solid sense of self. And, you know, because all of that makes for a healthy and happy family. And that was what I really wanted, because I was lucky enough to grow up in that. And so to me, that never seemed anything less than. So when I did make the choice to pause my career, I was somewhat gobsmacked by everyone's reactions to it, because to me, it didn't feel like anything inferior. It felt really like what I talk about now as just one part of sort of this evolving story.
And so I think you were in your apartment, you're swaying your little baby son, and you have a little bit of a moment where I think that starts to perhaps be that turning point for you. Tell us about that moment.
You know, I was sitting in this white rocking chair and it was 4 a.m. So it's not like I wasn't sleep deprived. Nursing did not come naturally to me. So I was like spraying milk everywhere. So none of this was glamorous. I was like on one phone, reaching the ends of the internet. I think I was on like Kaya Gerber's Best Friends, Moms. I don't know where I was on the internet, but I knew I'd reached the end. And yet there was just this sense of like my feet were on the ground. I knew how to show up. I didn't feel like there was anyone who I was trying to outdo or outbest. And so I don't think I made the choice to pause or make more room for motherhood because I thought it was the right choice for my children. I really do believe in all of the data points that say children are well served as long as they know they are loved and cared for and they have consistency and steady care. And that can be if a parent is working out of the home or in the home or existing in between. But I really made the choice because I also believe that children are well served when they have a happy and full parent. And I knew this was where I was going to be my happiest. And so I had already constructed a sort of part-time schedule. I knew I was going to go back at 5 months, 2 days a week. And I did that. And, you know, it was in the other days of the week that I was walking around meeting all these incredible women at the baby playgroup, at the playground. None of them matched the sort of outdated caricature of the stay-at-home mother. They were all professionals who had clocked in multiple years in their career. They had accrued education. They had really equitable relationships with their partners. And they were all making really conscious choices. Some were returning to work. Some were returning to work flexibly. The women I was interacting with and that I'm speaking about, we're saying, I don't want to travel internationally. I want to take a beat. I do believe I can go back, or I'm going to downshift my design line for a little while and see what happens in 2 years, or I'm going to take a full pause and see what comes next. And I think that that was where the spark started to fly for me, where I was looking around. And mind you, this was the height of the Lean In movement. So the girl boss era, the Lean In movement. And there was no representation of ambitious women choosing to pause. There was incredible examples floating around the internet of really powerful, incredible women. What it did was it sort of passed the rest of us with this sort of undue shame around our choices.
We'll hear more from Neha soon. But just a quick break to tell you about the Yuha Embody wearable breast pump that I'm using as I return to paid work. It's small, lightweight, and fits easily inside your bra, allowing you to be hands-free, whether it's around the house, out and about, or at work. I've used mine while cooking, while settling Posey, and even during a live recording, and it's worked wonders every time. This wearable breast pump comes in a gorgeous travel bag and has strong comfort suction settings designed to yield more milk for your baby. It's chic, and the minimal button design makes it super intuitive to set and forget. The MyUHA app offers an optional feature for remote control and tracking of your milk output, allowing you to share data with your healthcare professional to spot early issues with milk production or breastfeeding patterns. I can also hand on heart say it's the quietest breast pump I've ever used, and I've had such a good experience with it. What's better is you can get 15% off. Use the code READY15 during the month of July for 15% off the Embody Pump. Head to our show notes for the link. And so you returned to paid work part-time as a mother of one. What did you find to be maybe the best parts and then also the more challenging parts of starting to integrate paid work with the work of motherhood?
You know, I actually really loved that version of balance of 2 days out of the home. It was really fantastic. I will say that the bar for the work I was doing was higher.
Yeah.
As in, for the room, so I had childcare for those 2 days a week. I had a fantastic babysitter who I loved and I trusted. And I think that that really allowed me to step in out of the home with real confidence for those 2 days. My son, I felt like, really benefited and thrived having an extra set of hands part time. So the challenges around work were not so much about the actual getting up and leaving, because I block scheduled it too. So it was just Monday and Tuesday. I was in the office, and then the remainder of the week I was at home. I was also really boundaried about, you know, when I was going to be available, because I did not have childcare for the remainder of the week. So I think part-time is a slippery slope if part-time is not really part-time. I had a fantastic boss who really kept me engaged and kept me happy. And I think that that was my challenge, was the engagement level. Because when you're stark compare and contrast to the really purposeful work that I was doing in the home, albeit unpaid, some of the work I was doing just sort of paled in comparison, candidly. Even if I was good at it, even if it was with people I really enjoyed, it just didn't compare to watching a child who I really enjoyed being with grow. And by the way, as I mentioned, I really had set up rhythms on those days at home where I was building community. And I really liked sort of exploring who that other person was. So obviously, you know that the next part of the story is that I eventually did choose to pause.
And before we get to that, I want to talk about boundaries because I think we all talk about them, but some of us try to be good with them and others are actually good with them. How do you think it was that you were able to set good boundaries? Do you think it's challenging without an understanding team, or what do you think you did that perhaps other mums could try and bring into their repertoire?
I think it's a combination of things. I will say, knowing your employer and knowing the type of employment is important. If you're in a client service business that demands sort of an always on capacity or availability, that's very different. The scope of my work, I was very clear about with my employer going in. So we knew we had a very clear roadmap about what my goals were, how those goals helped her, how I would be able to accomplish those goals within the 2 days. Understanding too that needs do come up and figuring out, okay, should there be other needs? What's the fallback? Like if you do need to reach me on Wednesday through Friday, or Saturday or Sunday, here are the times that I'm likely to be able to check my phone. I am also very tough law boundaried around cell phones. I'm not someone who checks my email on my phone or around my kids, for better or for worse. That's why I'm always delayed on email, as you know. And so
I think that's a great skill because I check mine too much, like always. It's ridiculous. I don't even know why.
You know, that's because your babies are little. I feel like once they look at you and they'll say it to my husband, like, put your phone down.
Oh, like, good. I hope that happens.
Good for you. You know, we have some great content and sourcing flexible work in the library because I think it's a multi-prong. It's having really honest conversations when you're interviewing your employer and or when you're preparing to return to work about what their expectations are, where they're flexible, where they're not. The case of that particular company, there was no one else who had had children. So I really was sort of paving the way, which I think in some cases does not work in your favor. Like sometimes when you're the first one, there's too many question marks. This was a senior enough employer who is invested enough in women and me personally. And I do think a lot of it is your relationship with that person. So all of that said, then I think it's creating a really solid roadmap with tangible success metrics and those predictable windows where should things go awry. And then the only other thing I would say is also setting time to check back in, so that your employer does not feel like, I'm making this commitment to this person and then in 3 months, I'm going to be locked in, saying, you know, let's revisit how this is all working for both of us every month, every 6 weeks. And we did do that until the point that I said this is no longer working.
That's a great tip as well, because it almost can apply to motherhood, looking back, even if it's just with yourself, checking in, is this serving me financially, emotionally, mentally, physically? Is this working for me? I love that tip. So then you eventually become a mother of two. Before we get into Mother Untitled really having its birth, for a bit of a pun, tell us about going from one to two, because I found it much more, it's beautiful, but much more challenging than zero to one personally. I'm interested to know how it went for you.
It was very destabilizing. I found going from one to two very different than from going zero to one. The more women I've spoken to, I find there's a trend where for some people going from zero to one, having that first child really shakes them to the core and it really upends everything. And then when they transition to two, it's less of a big deal. And then the inverse is true. So the people like you and I, for whom maybe the transition to one was somewhat smooth, then the transition to two feels a little more unearthing. And in my case, I think, you know, I had my children 2.5 years apart. So I think naturally age 2.5 to 3 for boys especially, but I think all children can be rambunctious and full on. I think as you and I had just discussed, I had sort of found this perfect version of balance, quote unquote. I really hate that word, but it was a nice blend of my professional pursuit and my time at home, wherein 2 days out of the home really worked well. And the rest of my time sort of solely focused on this child, family administration and sort of the creative pursuit in the fringe hours during nights and nap times. And when my second Lila came along, at that point, it has upended any version of balance as I knew it. And it was the first lesson in sort of letting go of what you think works, letting it all burn a little bit. And be messy, because it was really messy, and I am not good in mess. I had probably tough law sort of compartmentalized and created all these predictable rhythms and then you know, a second child comes and sort of undoes that sense of control and order as you have it. And so it took me about sort of 6 months to find my footing. But it also, I say 6 months was also the turning point where I decided to bring on more childcare. So at that point, I had paused traditional work out of the home. And I think there was a huge stigma around bringing on childcare if you're not working for pay. So now not only was I sort of facing the stigmas around pausing paid work, but then, you know, I think too many women I've seen in our community and through interviews will sort of equate childcare as support only for paid work. And then if you're not doing that paid work, you don't believe you deserve paid help. When in reality, as I came to find out, was that no one in our family was well served with me trying to do this on my own. And like everything, you know, I sort of need to recalibrate what works for right now. And so I brought in a mother's helper 4 days a week and the game changed. But what it, you know, sort of really made me realize was I was so wanting the same quality time with her that I'd had with him. I wanted the same quality time with him that I'd had with her, or, you know, him that I'd had before, and none of those things were going to be possible. And so it was also this other letting go of realizing, you know, whatever happens now, whatever version of mother they each get is going to shape them the way they're meant to be. So there were a lot of lessons in it. There was a lot of softening what I thought worked. And that, I think, all in, she was just over a year when COVID happened.
So it's at this point, I think, that you decide to say goodbye to that traditional paid role that you did have, and you start to look into Mother Untitled a bit more. Tell us about that.
So I actually started Mother Untitled in 2017. I started building it just very organically. I think, you know, we're talking a lot about sort of facing the shame and stigma around things. And I'll tell you that, you know, when you go from having a sort of impressive career title to telling people that you're going to have a mom blog, it's a lot of checking ego. And, you know, I've come to learn that our culture really diminishes women's work, not just the unpaid work we do in the home, but also all of our small projects and lifestyle businesses. We have all sorts of language to talk about this. And it keeps women from really doing what they feel is true, impactful. And I was looking at the data. Our generation of women were going to be the first really that were really invested from an identity perspective in parenthood as well as in work. And that creates a really interesting tension. And the rise of the digital market, Instagram was booming at the time. And it all just felt like there's going to be, the trends were already, the numbers were ticking up for mompreneurs, if you want to call it that, back then. And so it felt like the moment was coming. But I'll tell you, when I started it, it was a blog and an Instagram, and it was chronicling my own experience of meeting incredible women, like I said, who sort of defied the logic or the tropes of stay-at-home mother, really trying to bring my own sense of ambition and holding ambition and feminism alongside this stage of my life, making room for creativity and all the tools available. And I think that's one of the blessings of social media, is it lets women be able to tinker with ideas really much more easily than they were able to previously.
I wish almost that I had my children then, because I would have loved to see the early days of what you were creating. I was in another planet, probably going out partying, who knows?
Good for you.
What were the main things or main messages coming to you from these women when you did start? What were they telling you?
So the women who were in the community.
Yeah, the women that was, I guess, seeing what you were doing and probably were the first champions of, wow, this is powerful work, what you're doing. We need more of this.
I think that, and this remains to be true about Mother Untitled, is we were one of the very few who represented a new space for ambitious women. So it did, it felt unique. It felt like we were seeing, I was able to sort of give words and language to women who were otherwise feeling like they were showing up at these parties and people would say, what do you do? And they would say, I'm at home. And they were almost glossed over. Or they were sort of with their in-laws, where this would come up often. They were with their in-laws and there was a lot of expectation that they would carry all the labor because that was their work. And so there was a lot of these very intelligent, very accomplished women who did feel a call to slow down their careers for a chapter to make room for motherhood, whose brains had not atrophied, whose relationships didn't overnight go back to the 1950s. But as they were navigating and walking the world now, they were being made to feel that way. And so for even the most self-assured women who were behind closed doors, not so dissimilar from me, rocking in a white chair, feeling the sense of wanting to lean more into it, they felt the sense of doubt. And I think when you feel shame, it limits your ability to enjoy a stage of life. It limits your ability to find power in your voice. So they weren't able to advocate for themselves in terms of getting the support they needed, whether that be paid or from their families. They didn't give themselves permission to sort of experiment and play with new ideas or new, because they were concerned about optics. What I was hearing resoundingly was they just felt completely misunderstood. And that we've seen reflected, as you might know, we commissioned a survey called the American Mothers on Pause Survey, and 80% of women at home, or they just feel completely counted out and misunderstood. That was really the goal and the mission. From day one, it was slow going.
And speaking of power, you're just releasing your book, The Power Pause. Before we get into what it actually goes through, I'm imagining this idea has been churning around in your mind for a while. How did it come to fruition?
As I was launching Mother Untitled into the world, I think one of the blessings was living in New York. I was able to, even with the kids, somehow pop into networking events and meet really incredible women who were plugged into the space. And even if I was planting seeds for it, I was still sort of keeping my finger on the pulse of how this sort of space was evolving. And I was meeting great champions of women in the workplace, right? And everywhere I looked, there were authors, and I knew many of them, and there were some great titles, and all of the titles in women and work were about how to sort of just cling to the ladder, all the ways to do more, do less, drop balls, find efficiencies, hire help. You know, there was all these incredible resources for the traditional working mother, quote unquote. And there was just not a title that considered a pause as a valid option and or a roadmap for women to walk through this stage of life with an equal sense of support and confidence and possibility. And so probably in 2018, I had it in the back of my mind. And I sort of, it's funny because when I submitted the one pager to the agent eventually in 2021, post-pandemic, 2022, sorry, it wasn't dissimilar from what I'd written in 2018. It was just that the culture was so much more ready to receive it post-pandemic.
Yeah. And so now tell us what the book actually covers.
So the book follows the sort of arc of preparing for a pause. So addressing the identity, the financial blocks, this sense of my career being over. And then it goes into the second section, which is really about how do you dive into this chapter, making it also about yourself and not just about your kids, setting your own goals, finding rhythms that help you thrive alongside your kids, permission to get help. And then in the last section, it's really about unlocking the possibility. So leveraging this time to network strategically, explore new interests, and then ultimately return with confidence.
That is going to be a powerful resource. How did you go about it? How did you go about writing it? It's one thing to, I guess, have these ideas, but bringing together something like this must be huge.
It is. And I will tell you, because I had been doing, if you come to the site right now, there's such a wealth of content. I've been working on this for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the interviews, a lot of guidance of living each of those stages and transitions written on and reflected on. Obviously, writing a book about it involves a lot more. But I would say, if you think about writing a book as there's sort of those core pillars, I knew what the pillars were because I've sort of reflected on it for a long time. And so that was there. I think the research is time intensive. The book is, you know, strung together certainly with personal narrative, but there's a lot of expert guidance and real mom interviews. I have to tell you, I think I loved it in part because it fueled the work I do on social and on site. They would say things that would catalyze a new way of thinking about things or a new topic that I hadn't explored. I did a lot of those interviews on the front end of writing the book, which was helpful. Because I think, you know, then that sort of gives you a lot of fodder I had a great developmental editor who was able to work with me. So if I would write, you know, a chapter, she would help me make sure that it sounded good and, you know, came together well. And so all to say, I think that it took time. It took a lot, even if the like standard process obviously takes time because of this sort of 5 years or 6 years that had preceded it, a lot of the foundation was there. And then it was about figuring out what the holes were and then finding help to, you know, support and guide the process.
Incredible. I'm thinking about mums that might be listening that feel compelled to pause their paid work. And I'm thinking about all those things that they reconcile with the identity. But I wanted this so much. How could I give up? All of these things that can go through our heads. But there's a big misconception that pausing paid work means that you're not upskilling. You and I both know that's a fallacy. You learn so much in motherhood and in so many different experiences of life. What would you say to that mum that's feeling less than because they are taking that pause about the other things that they might learn or find out about themselves via taking a pause?
Well, first I would start by saying that this is just for right now. For too long, we've been told that professional pause is sort of the death knell of our career. And the reality is one part of your evolving career portfolio, your life story. And I think if we can take the pressure off of this being a forever and finite decision, that's relieving in and of itself. And we discussed this earlier in terms of blending part-time work, this idea of recalibrating and coming back to the decision point, you know, giving yourself those checkpoints, whether that be with yourself or with a partner or with a career coach, you know, saying, let me check back in at the 3 month mark, 6 month mark, 1 year mark. And so, you know, the part two of that is deciding once you allow yourself to sink into the stage of life, whatever it demands of you, when you start to come out and feel that sort of gentle nudge of like, I'm interested in figuring out what comes next, you get to use this space to open up to a real sense of possibility. I think the incredible nature of parenthood is, as you're nodding to, it's leadership training ground. Just obviously, we talk a lot about patience and the organization and the time management and some of those hard skills. Sometimes the reality of raising children at different stages, like I have an 8-year-old now, and the things that come up with friends really ask of you to do some deep work about your own sense of belonging. If you allow it, parenthood can sort of open you up and motivate you to be the best version of yourself, because there's no bigger of a motivation. And then beyond that, if you are ready to sort of let in other opportunities, I think we're existing in a climate right now in a digital landscape that makes available the gig economy, makes available freelance consulting projects, but also volunteering opportunities within your school, within your community. We talk a little bit about you and I connected on Instagram. Instagram, for all the flack it receives, if you scroll that feed and realize like, oh, I'm looking at a lot of interior design accounts, maybe that's something I'm getting more curious about. Sometimes you can look at the content you're consuming and can leave clues for things that you may be interested in. We see in all of the data that the majority of women don't return to the exact industry that they were in prior, because, and a lot of that is because their perspective has been shaped in their time away from the workforce. A lot of them want more meaning when they return. And so if you allow it, this can be a great re-examination of who you are.
For better or for worse, the term imposter syndrome gets thrown around a lot, especially comes into my DMs whenever we do polls around topics on career and motherhood. If you are a mother returning after a pause, or just any parent, how do you think it's best to tackle the, I'm going to say it, I find it an annoying phrase because I don't want mums to feel that way because we have so much to give, but how do you think we tackle feelings like imposter syndrome?
I think we practice. I think a lot of it is fake it till you make it. The reality is knowing that everyone is feeling it to some degree. Yeah. I think that that just helps you hold it a little bit more lightly. It's one thought, it's one fear, it's one worry that a lot of different people have. And it's only natural. You know, you're in any transition when you're stepping back into a room that is new or different than, you know, sort of where you've been prior. It's a normal and natural feeling. Not assigning it any more weight than that is important. Whenever we see ourselves feeling uncomfortable, it means that we need more preparation. Obviously, on our site, but several other resources, have a lot of guides and support for figuring out how to own that story. Because a lot of it is about, yes, culture is shifting and we're normalizing pauses or time away from the traditional workforce, but it's still on the returner to shape that story, to find the words, to figure out the points of their sort of non-traditional experience away from the workforce, figure out what parts were really exciting to them, and be able to string together that story about all of that great experience they had prior to their career break. And then maybe they helped a partner on their business. Maybe they volunteered in for the, you know, school benefit. Maybe they set up a new bus route for their kids in their community, whatever those sort of pieces are. It's really important to keep stock as you're going through this of all those little things that are so quickly written off. But the moments you feel proud of, write those down, because one day when you're looking back and there's that big list and you're on the phone with a resume writer or you're talking to a friend who's looking over your LinkedIn with you, it'll be the way in which you connect the dots that makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. Leaning on the resources, whether free or paid, is important. They're there for a reason. It is a big transition.
And so you finished writing your book. Mother Untitled is obviously incredibly prominent in the space now. And your kids are a little bit older, which I'm sure brings ease in some ways and challenges in others. I'm sure it's not just easier now that you have an 8-year-old. What's making work looking like now in the paid sense? Because I'm thinking maybe it's more than 2 days at the moment in this season.
It is. And that, I'm not going to lie, that was a hard transition. You talked about writing the book, and I can sort of give you liberally like the prescriptive how to write a book. But I think what I wasn't prepared for was not just the time it would demand, but the headspace it would demand. It was the first time in a long time I'd felt that level of sort of external pressure and politics and stress. And it was foreign. And I think giving yourself the grace to know that that's temporary. You know, I think one of the biggest lessons from motherhood is, as we talked about at the beginning, how fluid, ever evolving and ever shifting it is. And so when I chose to take on the book and I sold the book deal, my kids had aged into full-time school. And so, you know, by nature of that, I was afforded more time when my husband takes them to school. So I'm from 8 to 3. We have a babysitter 3 afternoons a week, which means I really get a lot more time. I think the thing that I've become more intentional about this year versus last year is just making sure to protect my headspace and presence for the kids. Because I think adjusting to carrying more paid work obviously relied on giving up some of those beautiful afternoons for a season, making sure that I'm clear on sort of what really matters and making sure I take all that great perspective you learn in motherhood and letting that sort of keep me grounded.
You've led me to one final question, which is something else I put up on our polls recently on Instagram, and I couldn't believe how popular the topic was. It was about me time. And obviously the busier you get, the less of it you have. But let's say you do have an hour once a week, once a fortnight, whatever it is. How do you find it best to spend your me time, and how do you try to prioritize it when you're in really busy seasons?
You know, I think I once upon a time would have told you that my favorite way to spend an hour is just doing nothing, like staring at a wall if I needed to, or, you know, reading a magazine. I really love magazines, like old school print magazines. I think the words, the visuals, it all just sort of sparks something for me. I've come to realize that I really do need the meditation and movement. You know, it sounds so cliche, but around the pandemic, when I was, you know, really full on with both kids and, you know, no real support because my husband was sort of really deep in the trenches with his work at the time and our family wasn't near, that was the sort of one sacred hour and ritual was the 10-minute meditation, a 30-minute flow, 5 minutes of journaling. And it really made all the difference during potentially really hard times. So I've really tried to keep that going now.
I'm so happy you said that because I'm just transitioning. I mean, obviously my baby is quite little, but I'm just transitioning from taking the rest whenever I can to starting to actually get that fresh air and exercise. And I think it does make all the difference. So you've inspired me a bit more. I'm going to Pilates in 7 hours
So I'm glad. Yeah. I won't cancel now that I've spoken to you. You'll be asleep, hopefully, then, well and truly.
I hope so.
Naya, I am absolutely honored to have interviewed you. I cannot wait to read your book. Tell us the name of it, just in case anyone's forgotten, and when and how it will be available in Australia.
So if you want to purchase the book, you can on Amazon. It is available for pre-order now, but the book is due for publication on January 14th. It's called The Power Pause. And then in the meantime, you can come to Mother Untitled. We have just so many resources, no matter if you're preparing, embracing the stage of life, blending, or returning. So I encourage you to come and sign up there too.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.